This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. On Monday, Orlando police arrested a man on a homicide charge after he allegedly shot a man to death outside the US Citizenship and Immigration Services office. Police say the shooting, which sparked chaos at the office as people who'd been taking their citizenship test had to dive for cover, was domestic in nature. Harbor House of Central Florida says serious cases of domestic violence are on the rise, but they're also seeing more people come forward for help as the pandemic lifts. For more, I spoke with Harbor House's Laura Lucy about the nonprofit's work to help survivors of domestic abuse and violence. Well, Laura Lucy, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
So there have been a couple of fairly high-profile incidents in recent weeks, most notably this week, a tragic case of a homicide that the police are saying is domestic in nature. A man was shot and killed outside of the USCIS office in Orlando. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what you're seeing at Harbor House and maybe some of the trends we're seeing in terms of the prevalence of domestic violence in our community over the last 12 months or so.
Right. When we first were on the lockdown, we were hearing from fewer victims. We were getting fewer survivor calls because people were at home 24/7 with their abuser. So they didn't have those opportunities of, hey, the abuser went to work, so now I can call Harbor House or I can call a friend. People also were not seeing anyone else in the community. So, friends and family and their hairstylist and the friendly cashier at the grocery store that they might talk to or might reach out to in some way. So there was a lot of time spent at home with the abuser. As we started to emerge from the lockdown, we've started to get more calls on our hotline. We've started to get more people who are not as fearful of coming into shelter because with COVID, people were afraid of coming into a new environment. So we have seen increases in people reaching out to us. But in terms of the violence, we have definitely seen an increase in lethality. So what that means is the cases where it could potentially lead to death, to a murder. So we're seeing more people coming in who have been stabbed, who have survived strangulation, things like that.
Is it fair to say there's a connection too between the pandemic, like the stress of it, and increased incidences of domestic violence, or is that a stretch to kind of make that connection?
No, things like COVID, the pandemic, the lockdowns, they don't turn someone into an abuser. But if someone is an abuser, it can definitely exacerbate the situation, all of those stresses. So the main thing with domestic violence, it's all about power and control. So while they were locked down together and together 24/7, abusers had a lot of power and control over their victims. And as we're emerging, more people are being vaccinated, more places are opening back up, and people are getting out of the house, the abusers are seeing some of that control that they had slip away. So while they could be a little more creative with their abuse behind closed doors when no one was able to see their victims, people are getting out more and they don't like that they don't have that control. So that's when we see the level of violence really ratcheting up right now.
Mm-hmm. And was it something you were expecting, like when things shut down last year and a lot of people were out of work, were you kind of thinking this is what we probably need to be planning for 12 months down the line or even sooner than that?
Yes, we unfortunately did expect to see this.
What about the kind of awareness in the community? Like, do you feel like people who aren't in these situations and are obviously focused on a lot of other things because, you know, the pandemic itself is, you know, it's taking up a lot of people's attention right now. Does that mean that people may be less aware of situations where domestic violence may be happening and maybe less likely to notify police or other people if they see somebody in need?
Well, I think during the shutdowns, we were also isolated that people just didn't see and didn't notice. We were all concerned about ourselves and our own health and safety. But it's important to remember to check in on your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers.
Can you give me a sense of the kind of need you have for the services you offer at your shelter, for example? Like, are you needing to find other places for people to find refuge? Like, what's the kind of logistics of it right now as far as Harbor House is concerned?
At the height of COVID, we did reduce the capacity in our shelter. We stayed open the whole time, though. We were here offering services. So the shelter was open and fully operational, though with reduced capacity. We never turned anyone away. If we were at that COVID capacity, then we did put survivors up at hotels until a space in the shelter became available. We also have outreach offices throughout Orange County, and those remained open. There was a time when most of those meetings were online via Zoom or just by phone, but our advocates were there the entire time, and we're still here today. We're slowly increasing the capacity at our shelter to get back up to full capacity as we have, you know, again, more people are vaccinated and we're able to bring more people in, but we do not turn anyone away. Even if the shelter's full, we will find a safe place for you to stay.
Mm-hmm. Where does law enforcement fit into this? Like, for example, during the pandemic, were you maybe relying a little more on them to be the eyes and ears, whereas other people in the community may have been filling some of that role pre-lockdown, that is, you know, pre-pandemic?
Yes, we do rely on law enforcement. They send a lot of referrals our way. We also have a program where we have advocates actually located with law enforcement at their offices. And any cases that come in that are those high lethality cases, it's a program called Early Victim Engagement. So they let our Harbor House advocates know, hey, how about you reach out to this person because it looks like the situation could really escalate. And so our advocates will reach out to those survivors and see if we can get them help with our services.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask too about Pause for Peace. I know this happened last month, but that's an annual fundraising walk that happens, and it sort of ties in pets with awareness of domestic violence. Are you able to talk a little bit about the kinds of kind of connections there are and maybe how that whole situation plays out? Because my understanding is that a lot of times people who are in domestic violence situations or experiencing domestic violence, they're part of what makes them afraid to leave or reluctant to leave is the fear that, you know, their pets may be harmed or killed as well.
Yes, we do have the Pause for Peace kennel that's on site at our emergency shelter campus. And so we don't want that to be a barrier to anyone if they're considering leaving an abusive relationship, because a lot of times there is abuse of the pets when there is abuse of the humans in a house. So we don't want anybody left behind with the abuser. So they can bring in dogs, cats. We've had rabbits and fish and all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I know that there's a little bit of pressure on animal shelters right now because, you know, it's kind of a post-pandemic thing. So are you finding that, is that sort of shelter, you still have space there for folks who may need to come in and bring their pets with them?
Yes, we do. We have plenty of space in the kennel. We have seen an increase over the last year. We had over a 100% increase in people coming in with their pets. But I think that's a good thing that the word is getting out that we do offer that service. And so people can come in with their pets. They don't have to leave them behind.
Just joining me, my guest is Laura Lucy. She's with Harbor House of Central Florida. Laura, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about some of the things that people should be looking out for. Like, what are some of the warning signs? I mean, just kind of thinking about the, as you say, the increase in lethality. Obviously, the goal is to try and head that off at the pass. So what should people be looking out for, and what kind of help can people offer if, you know, they know somebody who may be in a situation like this?
Right. If you have a friend, family member, coworker that you suspect is in an abusive relationship, the main thing is to just let them know that you're not judging them. It's easy to say just leave, but it's not easy to just leave. They often have legal and financial entanglements with their abuser, like a mortgage, like children, like pets in some cases. So it's a lot harder to leave than you think. So just try to be gentle with that person. Let them know about Harbor House's services. As far as the warning signs, usually the abuser starts out as a very charming person and their victim gets sucked into the relationship very quickly. If you've noticed behavioral changes in your friend, they used to go out a lot and now they're always making excuses, and sometimes their excuses don't seem to make much sense to you. If they're also making excuses for their partner's behavior, and obviously physical signs like bruises and things like that you want to look out for, but it's usually more subtle than that.
Mm-hmm. We're also, Orlando is a very multicultural community. Can language be sometimes a barrier for people seeking help?
Yes, we do everything we can to accommodate all of the languages, all the beautiful culture of Orlando. So we have a very diverse staff. And on staff, we have advocates who speak English, Spanish, and Creole. And then we use a language line or bring in translators if someone speaks a language other than those.
As far as what you think the outlook is, as you say, we're kind of coming out of the worst of the pandemic, at least things are starting to return to some semblance of normal. What do you think that means for the work of Harbour House going forward for the next 6 months, say?
We're expecting to be busy over the next 6 months. As more people are getting out, businesses are back open, people are returning to their offices, children are returning to school. We're going to see more survivors are feeling more comfortable in reaching out for help and then getting out of the house. And they're also going to have more space to reach out for help. So if they're not on lockdown with their abuser all day, every day, they'll have more opportunities to reach out for help. And so we plan to be there for them.
And I wonder if just kind of casting back to the last year or so, thinking about some of the things that companies and nonprofits had to do to adapt. I mean, one thing we've all become very accustomed to is meeting and talking on Zoom, right, as we're doing right now. Have you been able to sort of build some of that technology into the work you do, either kind of finding people to help or just the sort of outreach that Harbour House offers? Like, has some of that kind of naturally gone online? I'm wondering if some of that assistance will remain remote from here on out.
Yes, we have moved some support groups online. Some support groups are meeting via Zoom for survivors. We also started a friends and family support group. So those people who have a loved one who may be beyond that relationship or may still be in the abusive relationship, we have support for friends and family as well. So those have all remained online. We also assisted clients who had hearings online. That was another thing that Orange County did. So not all of the injunction for protection hearings were in person. So that was another way that we supported survivors. And I think those are probably going back to in person. But if not, then we'll continue to support them. We also have childcare on our emergency shelter campus. So we've always had before and after school care and a preschool there. But we added support for K-12 distance learners, because a lot of the people living in our shelter had children who were in elementary, middle, and high school that were not going in person. So we've had our youth advocates supporting them as well with distance learning.
Well, Laura, Lucy is the Grants and Marketing Manager at Harbour House of Central Florida. Laura, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Up next, Opera del Sol debuts a new work at the Orlando Fringe Festival, mixing the music of Mozart with tracks by Radiohead and others. We'll talk about the work with Opera del Sol's creative director, Nicole Dupre, after the break.